SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Wednesday live right here on the new The Early Line. Live right here on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Thank you for joining us on day number two of this rendition of The Early Line. DRS and I will be together each and every weekday starting at 8 a.m. Eastern. A three-hour jam-packed mega show up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. DRS, hour number two starts with some tennis talk from the best tennis player, apparently, on the Sports Grid Network. That would be Donnie Wrightside.
Mm-hmm. That is. Can't wait to talk about it here. Some big doings here in the U.S. Open. And also, lines getting shorter for your favorite here on the men's side of the bracket in Novak Djokovic. But my goodness, you got the young Americans. They're not going to give up, Ben. They ain't going to give up.
Three Americans in action yesterday during quarterfinal play on the men's side at the 2023 United States Open up at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, the final Grand Slam event of this year in the world of tennis. It was Novak Djokovic making quick work of one of the Americans, Taylor Fritz. An all-American showdown in the other quarterfinal match between the 10-seed Francis Tiafoe, who made the sensational semifinal run just a summer ago, and the young 20-year-old American, the big serving lefty, Ben Shelton, who knocked off Tiafoe in four sets. We'll break it down in just a moment. First, DRS and myself, welcome in our Sports Grid radio audience. Hour number two of the Early Line live right here on this Wednesday. Sirius XM Channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the mix as well. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. So DRS, Ben Shelton, the 20-year-old American, the youngest American in more than two decades since Andy Roddick in 2002 to reach the quarterfinals at the U.S. Open. Does one better than Roddick, advances to the semifinals, pulling off the slight upset over fellow American Francis Tiafoe in four sets late last night into the early morning hours up in Queens. He serves at 140 miles per hour, DRS. That might even be a serve off the left-hand racket you couldn't have handled in your heyday.
Nah, come on. That was my second serve speed at a buck 40 back in the day. Let's talk about Ben Shelton here. I mean, you impressive performance overall. Let's also remind ourselves, you see, Tiafoe was the 10th seed in this tournament. Ben Shelton unseeded here and doing damage. That's fantastic stuff all the way through. And sometimes we don't give tennis players enough credit. That's one-on-one for four and sometimes five-hour matches. Yeah. Then you get basically 24 hours off, and you get to go do it again. And we talked about how hot it's been here in the Northeast. Incredible performance, and this is what can get you juvenized here, or you know, enthusiastic, should say, for U.S. tennis. I was like, Ben Shelton, this is fun to watch a young guy on the big stage and see how he performs.
DRS, a great point. It's hot, it's humid, it's sticky, it's sweaty in New York City throughout this week. Temperatures in the mid-90s, real feels that make it even spicier than that. The young legs of a 20-year-old Ben Shelton advancing to the semifinals, where he will face off against Novak Djokovic. A tough part of the draw for Shelton, unseeded in this, but only more favorable for Djokovic as he looks for his 24th Grand Slam title. It would be the most in either men's or women's tennis in the Open era. And DRS, as we look at the odds for Friday's semifinal between Djokovic and Shelton, Novak minus 2,800 to advance to the men's final. That would be on Sunday. Novak Djokovic making quick work, like we said, of the other American in the quarterfinal action yesterday, Taylor Fritz, 6-1, 6-4, 6-4 for the Joker. So, DRS, the rest of the action we had yesterday on a Tuesday quarterfinal night up in Queens. Karolina Muhova gets the victory in that over Sarana Cristea in the first quarterfinal match in the summer of Coco or Corey, depending on how she is listed. That is her lead legal name on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Coco Gauff, though, knocks off Jelena Ostapenko in the other quarterfinal match. Coco, the 19-year-old American DRS, will play in the semifinals at the 2023 United States Open against Muhova.
Yeah, some people take a look at Corey and Coco Gauff like, come on now. I thought there was like a Serena and a Venus Williams. No, it's the same actual person. So you're going to get that value. Yeah. Straight set winner, which is impressive. Again, another young American tennis player on home soil doing some damage here. It certainly is fun to watch. By the way, Ben Shelton, I did find out that his middle initial is S. So a true BSS out there. Is that true?
No. No way. In great company, I feel right now with
now, you want to say that?
Double S.
Yeah. When you see Ben Shelton, do you immediately say, you know what, I'm about to say Ben Stevens at this point? Does it ever trip you up a little bit?
Sometimes DRS with Ben Simmons back in the day when he actually played basketball, that would trip me up a little bit.
There you go. You know, a little bit of background there. By the way, I don't know if his middle name is S. I don't know if it's an S or not, but it might as well be today. So there you go. BSS out on there in the court. Let's go.
We'll get our tennis aficionado and producer here on this show, Joe Friso, on that. Ben Todd Shelton, he writes in through the rundown. So BTS, behind the scenes with Ben Shelton. All right, elsewhere in quarterfinal action, DRS on this Wednesday. The other 20-year-old that still lives in the 2023 U.S. Open on the men's side, Carlos Alcaraz, the defending champion at the U.S. Open, of course, winning at Wimbledon in late July over Novak Djokovic. He plays today in the U.S. Open quarterfinals as nearly a $4 favorite, or $5 favorite, in fact, minus 465 against Alexander Zverev. The other side, Daniil Medvedev, who knocked off Novak in 2021, is a minus 265 favorite against Andrei Rublev. DRS, you got to play for today's action on the men's quarterfinals of the 2023 U.S. Open?
Yeah, to win the U.S. Open, just parlay Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz together. You can't lose. Just parlay those two guys together to win it all. How about that?
No doubt about it, DRS. If you want a double chance, by the way, Novak Djokovic or Carlos Alcaraz to win the men's title at the 2023 U.S. Open, minus 1,200. Not a chalky guy, Donnie Wrightside. Not a chalky guy at all. Alcaraz, though, plus 165, that second best number to win this tournament outright. Now the top seed left on the women's side, DRS, Aryna Sabalenka, as Iga Swiatek, the number one player in the world formerly, the top seed in this tournament, went down over the weekend. Sabalenka, minus 375 today in her quarterfinal matchup. And the best bet from our tennis aficionado and producer here on TEL, Joe Friso. He says Madison Keys, minus 132 against Marketa Vondrosova in the other quarterfinal, DRS. You tailing Joe Friso with some tennis action on this Wednesday?
I mean, why not get after it? And also, you want to up the ante here. Keys to win it all, plus 750. By the way, Coco Gauff, plus 165. It'll be interesting now that she is the favorite in the clubhouse, how she handles that pressure here. Good stuff here at the U.S. Open for sure.
Coco Gauff is that favorite. I would be interested, though, DRS, once Sabalenka, if Sabalenka wins today, she is heavily favored to do so, what those title prices look like. DRS, what was the line when you knocked off Andre Agassi at the age of only 12 years old back in 1989? Was Agassi the favorite, or were you?
Look, there was no legalized sports betting out there, but if I would have set it myself, massive favorite for DRS here, and he did move on, so there you go. Stories have been told.
Easy. We're probably talking Novak Djokovic minus 2,800 against Ben Shelton. That sort of line. Back to the NFL on Game Day E next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Today on this Wednesday, live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid, it is the eve of the opening game day of the 2023 NFL regular season. Tomorrow night on a Thursday in KCMO, inside Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs host the Lions. Again, DRS, we continue our divisional preview around the National Football League live right here on this Wednesday on TEL. We'll get to the AFC West, the fourth and final division in the AFC tomorrow on game day ahead of the opener in Kansas City. We finish with our third of the other three divisions in the AFC on this Wednesday. Donnie, we talked about it. Is the AFC East the best division in football? I don't think so. You think it's 1A, 1B with the AFC North. So let's talk about the AFC North. Absolutely star-studded and loaded. The Bengals, the favorites right now in the division, a plus 150 number. 70 cents in front of the flock, that's Baltimore, plus 220. Cleveland, nearly $4 at 4-1. But DRS, you'll see it right there. Pittsburgh, plus 470. Yeah. All four teams in this division separated by only just about $3. DRS, to me, that speaks to the strength overall of the AFC North and how loaded and competitive this division is going to be in 2023.
It's sensational all the way through. I love it from top to bottom. You could argue that the Pittsburgh Steelers at a plus 470 price is a steal because they're going to be in it to win it the entire season. I actually took a little bit of a flyer on the Steelers to win the Super Bowl at a 50-1 price. Now, granted, as I say, do I think they can actually win the Super Bowl? Not necessarily, but if they make the playoffs, you can turn that ticket into a profitable experience. Now, let's take a look at the Bengals at a plus 150 price. Quality football team, absolutely star-studded quarterback. You know it, but I think it's mispriced here, and the Ravens should actually be the better priced team here in that division. Ooh. To win it instead of the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cleveland Browns, plus 400, they should be in last place in the odds race here behind the Pittsburgh Steelers. But let's start here with the Cincinnati Bengals quickly. Before we even break down the roster itself, I can't understand or even imagine why Joe Burrow isn't the highest paid player in football, maybe in sport right now, because the Cincinnati Bengals know exactly what the price point is and haven't paid him yet. I can't even understand what the finagling behind the scenes in. This should have been wrapped up, taken care of, where you're not worried about injuries or play, or is my agent going to call me on a Monday night and say, ooh, we finally have a deal struck here, and that's all you've been worrying about as opposed to the playbook here. So I look at that as a slight detriment here to the Bengals in 2023 that you haven't taken care of. Forget about T. Higgins, who's sitting there waiting as a top wide receiver in the NFL to get paid, but you're not going to pay Joe Burrow, or you're going to haggle over price with Joe Burrow? Come on now, Bengals.
Donnie, there hasn't been much movement in these odds throughout the offseason since they were originally set or throughout training camp or preseason. The only bit of movement we've really seen around the National Football League, the Bengals coming back just a tad in the AFC North, shortening the price for Baltimore. Now only live a 60 cent gap. The Bengals plus 150, the Ravens plus 210. That happened, DRS, after the collective football world held their breath the opening week of training camp when Joe Burrow pulled up limp with that right calf injury. He missed a ton of camp. DRS, are you concerned at all about the health of Joey B entering 2023?
Anytime you have a soft tissue injury coming into the season, it's never a good thing. Just take a look at what's going on with the Los Angeles Rams and Cooper Kupp right now. That could be lingering through. But I think they had enough time for him to actually acclimate back, take it slow, and it looks like he's day-to-day. We're expecting him to start on Sunday here. But it's never a good thing, because that's one thing where at any given moment that can pop back up, and that's not a week-to-week injury. That's a weeks-to-weeks injury here, and that could be a detriment. But I'm just looking at it from a totality for the Bengals. Why? You should be blessed to have a quarterback as good as Joe Burrow, and you're haggling over price. Now, granted, if he's asking for double what Patrick Mahomes got, understandable. But we all know what the price of the brick is right now for quarterbacks, and come on now. Yep. The template is there. Sign him on the dotted line. Let's get going.
Certainly so, DRS. The timeline is always interesting in the National Football League. Things don't happen until they absolutely have to happen, except the Chargers did already ink the deal with Justin Herbert. Both Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. Burrow picked first overall, of course, in 2020. Herbert sixth overall by LA in 2020. Herbert was paid this offseason on the opening day of camp for the Bolts, the $52.5 million man, the highest salary from an annual average basis in the history of the National Football League. It only seems a matter of time for Joe Burrow. Now, 11.5 is the win total for Cincinnati, a number they went over last year. 12 wins, of course, in only 16 games because of the scary scene on that Monday night, Week 17 in Cincy, featuring Buffalo's DeMar Hamlin. But DRS, that was the only time since he went over this win total of 11.5 since 2015. 11.5 is that number for Cincinnati right now. They have not gone over 11.5 wins often in the last really 25 years since the millennium turned. So it will be interesting to see how you correlate those prices to a divisional crown. DRS, I've already picked the Bengals to win the AFC. I believe they will be the conference champions. I believe in Cincinnati. I think they should have the second best price in the AFC, not Buffalo.
Yeah, the tough part about it, again, is the division that you play in, which, again, the Buffalo Bills aren't going to be going through the, you know, AFC East with a hot, like a hot knife through butter. But having said that, you're looking, I just think there's a little bit too many question marks here coming back on the Bengals, and you're already starting with an injury. Now, you could counter that argument with B-Ben and say, well, look, you know, he had a blown out knee after his rookie year, the appendectomy, and now he's got the calf. He's used to adversity coming into the season, or at least in the offseason. And he's not, you know, Joe Burr, Joe Cool for no reason. That guy stands in the pocket and delivers with one of my favorite wide receiving cores in the entire NFL. The weapons are going to be there, but if I'm just looking at the totality of the division and how tough it's going to be, they might be able to win a Super Bowl. I'm not doubting it, but that 11.5, I might actually lean towards the under there. And again, it's no shame in the Cincinnati Bengals game. That's a tough division. You win 11 football games and aren't going to cash that ticket? Look, you could still win a Super Bowl doing that.
The underjuiced of that 11.5 win total right now. Again, we mentioned it, DRS. The gap shortened this offseason between the Bengals and the Ravens after Lamar got paid. The $52 million per year man signing that long-term extension on the night of the 2023 NFL Draft's opening round. There is now optimism once again for the flock. A new offensive scheme under OC Todd Monken, who was the offensive coordinator at the college level for the Georgia Bulldogs the last couple of years. Odell Beckham Jr. is there now in Baltimore. They add Zay Flowers in the draft. There's a lot of expectation for the young rookie wideout out of Boston College. DRS, how do you view Baltimore entering 2023?
Baltimore's got a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl. Took them at an 18-1 price point here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, and I think that is legitimate. I think there's a definite chance they can make it to the AFC Championship game. Why is that? Now, granted, they do play in a tough division. That's always going to be a little bit of a detriment. Solid secondary, playmaking linebackers, an elite pass rush, solid offensive line, and maybe the best skill position players that Lamar Jackson has seen. He's healthy. He's coming back from injury. He's feeling good in the offseason. He got paid the amount of money he wants to be. All those good vibes are certainly going to help out here, because last year when we were talking at this time, it looked like John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson couldn't stand each other by basically saying, keep my name out of your mouth, and I don't know who that quarterback is, and hey, what do you think about your coach? Ah, you know, I train here and there, and I'll come back when I need to be because I'm not healthy. It was probably because he wasn't getting that big paycheck. But Bateman, Flowers, Beckham, Andrews, and Dobbins, there's enough weapons there. The Baltimore Ravens, if they stay healthy, are going to be the team to watch in the AFC. That's why I got them at 18-1 to win it all.
One of the underrated storylines this year, tracking that offense under Todd Monken and how things look different for a team that pretty much led the National Football League, or at least was top three in rushing the last 5 years. DRS, the Cleveland Browns have not won the AFC North since the late 80s, 1989, the same year Donnie Wrightside knocked off Andre Agassi. What is your outlook for Cleveland entering 2023?
1989, great album too, Ben. Find out who the singer to that album was and get back. Okay, there you go. All right, now the Cleveland Browns, there's too many question marks here. If I got this season a starting quarterback like I had back in Houston for Deshaun Watson, we would have a big season. I don't think I'm getting that guy. Therefore, it's not going to be a big season for the Browns here, Ben.
I don't know if we'll ever see that guy. The six-game sample size last year, a 58.2% completion percentage, only averaged about a .184 through the air. College football next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back live right here on the Early Line on this Wednesday. It's Donnie Wrightside. It's Ben Stevens. We wrap up our conversation in the AFC North because, DRS, there's a team that in 16 years has not had a losing record under one head coach. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers under Mike Tomlin. They have never won less than 8 games. They have never had a losing record in that time. And DRS last year won 6 of their final 8 games to finish a game above 500, 9-8 overall. So when you see the win total, DRS, for Pittsburgh this year, 8.5, the over juiced at -150, it only makes sense to me the over has that much juice on the Steelers this season.
Yeah, by the way, the Steelers, again, they're just going to be a product of their division, but I expect much bigger things. Where I talk about the New England Patriots with not really a chance to win the AFC East, I think the Steelers actually have a legitimate chance to win the AFC North. Yes, there are talented teams, and I do think the Ravens have a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl, but don't sleep on the Steelers. An elite pass rush, an elite secondary, a quality offensive line, weapons at the wide receiver position. You have Kenny Pickett at quarterback who comes in last year, gets his bumps and bruises out of the way, learns on the fly. Yep. Now he's expected to do big things, and you do have still have Harris in the backfield. And also, again, Mike Tomlin at head coach. If I told you, as you just said, this is a head coach that doesn't have a losing record, why would you be betting against him? And based on that total, team total, you would be betting against him. I'm high on the Pittsburgh Steelers here. A couple breaks go their way, watch out. They win that division, and they could be hell on wheels on the defense, Ben. I love the defense.
Plus 470 for the Steelers, the longest of four prices in the AFC North, but only $3.20 behind the favorites. That's the Cincinnati Bengals, a plus 128 price for the Steelers as well to make the AFC playoffs. That's where my money would go on Pittsburgh if you were looking for a bet on the Steelers this season. They were perfect in the preseason. I know it was the preseason, but a small glimpse of what Kenny Pickett and that offense might be able to do in year number two. The last time the Steelers had a losing record, it was a 6-10 mark under Bill Cowher back in 2003. That is two decades ago. All right, now we transition to college football. Live right here on this Wednesday on TEL, making his debut on this new rendition of the Early Line, it is Mark Zinno. To recap week number one, the entirety of college football getting underway, and then in our next segment together with Zinno right here, the mouth in the South will give us some picks for a huge Saturday slate week number two around CFB. Zinno, welcome to the Early Line. Are you happy to see Donnie Wrightside on the other side? I know you guys hosted this show like 2 weeks ago together.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is not our first foray together, me and DRS, but it's great to be with you guys. Loving the new format, the new setup, and Donnie, you look wonderful in a blazer, my friend.
See that? Look, and again, the compliments came my way, not Ben's way. That's a good start here, Mark. That's a very good start.
We're too familiar with one another. All right, Mark Zinno, let's look back at week number one. The marquee matchup of the weekend, the only ranked versus ranked game that we had a top 10 tilt in Orlando. Eighth-ranked Florida State taking it to Hay against fifth-ranked LSU. 45-24, the victory for the Seminoles. They scored 31 unanswered to start the second half before the Bayou Bengals added in a late garbage time touchdown in that fourth quarter. Zinno, a lot that probably impressed about the Seminoles' dominance against LSU on Sunday night. What stood out to you the most?
Well, Ben, look, before I get started about the game itself, I do have to take a small little victory lap with you personally here. I think we disagreed on this game. I told you Jordan Travis was the better quarterback between him and Jaden Daniels. And I think I recall you scoffing at me a little bit. Is that true or no? Are we denying that?
No. Jordan Travis. I brought up the point that Jordan Travis was sensational in the opener. Last year, 260 yards, two passing touchdowns. The only thing I said was that Jaden Daniels is going over his rushing yards prop and finishing with 64. He did exactly that.
Yes, he did. Now, look, what was most impressive to me and what I really hung my hat on in this game was the Florida State defense. And they did that very well against LSU and Jaden Daniels, really bottling up that entire offense. I think Brian Kelly is an excellent X's and O's coach. I think he's a great schemer for college football. But it's that FSU defense, particularly their secondary, that was so good in this game and really turned the tide for them early on. It was one of those things where it seemed back and forth in the first half, but Florida State's defense really put the clamps on them in the second half. And look, I don't think we are overstating the level of contender that Florida State is. I know there's a ton of overreactions after 1 week of college football, but for me, this defense was always an elite defense within the country, a top 20 defense across the board. And really, that's what Florida State is going to hang their hat on. And oh, by the way, still have a pretty good quarterback to boot.
By the way, watching that game overall, I was really impressed by both of these quarterbacks, and rightfully so. We have these guys as highly rated guys. But having said that, Travis goes for the four touchdown passes there. I bet the over 1.5 touchdown passes. He cashed that in the first half. But the angle I want to look at here, Mark, is not so much for Florida State riding that crest here, now in the top five in the AP polls. I want to take a look at LSU. Give me a prognosis for the rest of the season, because Brian Kelly right now is taking on the chin. But also, let's remind ourselves, this wasn't LSU ranked 24th coming into the season. They were ranked fifth coming into the season and got crushed opening night. How can they rebound in the SEC this year?
again, the idea that we're going to sit here and write the demise of LSU to me is a little bit overstated. I mean, honestly, I know Florida State handed it to them, but in reality, this is still a team that has double-digit wins right within front of them. It's not like they can't beat their schedule. I mean, it is very favorable. Yes, they have to go to Tuscaloosa in the beginning of November, but they may be an entirely different team by then, and we'll find out this week what Alabama really is. I'm not sitting here writing off LSU, and people want to sit there and put so much into the rankings and the idea of Colorado and Duke all of a sudden shot into this thing. Ben, you and I talked about this last week. We made the same mistake with Florida last year off of one game where they beat Utah, and a game they shouldn't have beat Utah because Cam Rising shouldn't have thrown that ball and gotten picked in the end zone. Beyond, we're not going to relitigate history, but simply is we overreacted to Anthony Richardson, we overreacted to Florida, and 3 weeks later we realized, what? We overreacted. So let's not do that with LSU here. This is still a very good football team with a lot of things still in front of them, i.e., again, still the chance to go to the SEC championship game.
I think that three-touchdown difference probably leads to the disparity in the reactions to Sunday night, but although LSU's price falls back in the SEC plus 460 entering the year, now 7-1. Let's not forget that was a non-conference opener that LSU also lost last year, only by a point, but the Tigers still played for an SEC title the first Saturday in December in Atlanta as champions of the SEC West. LSU slides in the rankings, fifth entering the year in the preseason poll, now number 14 overall. Florida State shoots all the way up to fourth in the country. Speaking of risers in the rankings, Mark Zeno, do you remember where you were when Colorado shut the college football universe and took down TCU in Fort Worth on the opening full Saturday of the college football seasons? The Buffs now 22nd in all the land. After only one game in the Deion Sanders era, Colorado into the top 25, the 20.5-point outright upset over TCU on Saturday. Zeno, there has been a lot of reaction on Colorado pulling off the stunner over the reigning national runner-ups. Do you think it was a glimpse into the future for what is in store for Prime and the Buffs this year?
The short answer is I think it's a glimpse into the future, yes, but I'm not sitting here going to have this conversation that they're going to ascend to the top of the Pac-12 and they're going to be college football playoff contenders. I mean, guys, look, you know, TCU, okay, had so much turnover, and their defense just wasn't very good. And their defense wasn't very good last year metrically. So let's just pump the brakes a little bit here. This is an overreaction of what Colorado is. Odds makers had an overreaction. Bettors had an overreaction. Everybody's had an overreaction to it. That's fine. Now, fortunately for Colorado, they may be able to feast on another questionable opponent here in Nebraska in week two, building some more momentum for this whole idea. As like Big Ten Ben over there shaking, you know, rubbing his hands together. But, you know, sort of adding more fuel to the fire here of what Colorado is going to be. That's all fine and good. Is Colorado going to win probably four or five games? I think that's feasible. I think that's fair. But let's not sit here and act like all of a sudden this is a team that is going to win double-digit games and we're going to have conversations about them being a top 10 team in the country. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Remember, their defense still gave up 42 points. This is one of the worst defenses in Power 5 football last year, and they can't improve enough in one season to even come close to being a team that, you know, I would say wins 8 or 9 games. They're just not that yet. They might win 5. They may even win 6 and get to a bowl game in year 1. But let's not really try to make this more than what it is right now. Not taking anything away from Deion or Shedeur Sanders or anything that's gone on. But let's just slow down a little bit.
Mark, quick question here. Do you agree with the line movement coming up for this weekend with Colorado and Nebraska?
Well, I think the Sharps got the best of the number, and as they should, and the line movement reacted accordingly. I'm going to wait here as long as I can and may fire back on Nebraska. Look, Nebraska's a much better defense than TCU, so they're going to present a whole different set of problems than TCU did. We'll see how, you know, Colorado and Shedeur Sanders and the offense reacts. I don't think they're putting up 45 again this week. If they get to 30, I'd be surprised. Nebraska's style of play will grind the pace of this thing down. And without Nebraska giving up some major big plays defensively, this is just going to look like a completely different game here. I'll wait till I can get, if I see if I can get something, and I would jump on Nebraska out of principle.
95% of the betting handle is on the
Little
Colorado
red.
Buffaloes. Colorado entered this season as an 8.5-point underdog for the second full Saturday of the college football campaign. Nebraska, moneyline, plus 128. Everybody say it with me. Picks with the mouth in the South, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to This Wednesday, live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 159. We preview weekend number two, the second full Saturday of this college football season in 2023. Marquee matchups across the board, including the headliner inside Bryant Denny in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, between the Crimson Tide and the Texas Longhorns. And because of that, I think DRS is going to like this animation. It's time for the Mouth in the South to dole out his SEC picks. We are here on TEL. Donnie Wrightside on your far right or left, depending on how you're looking at the screen. Mark Zeno is in the middle. He is the Mouth in the South, and I am Ben Stevens. Mark Zeno, week number two of the college football season, headline in prime time under the lights in Tuscaloosa between third-ranked Alabama and 11th-ranked Texas. It was that marquee matchup that we had last year in Austin, where Alabama was a 20.5-point road favorite, except they stumbled and they squandered, but they came back to hold on for a victory thanks to the reigning Heisman winner, Bryce Young, winning by just a single point, 20-19 in Austin a year ago. Now it's a top 15 tilt between Texas and the Tide. Zeno, the Longhorns victorious by 27 points week number one against Rice, but they struggled a little bit, came nowhere close to covering as a 35.5-point favorite. Alabama absolutely blew the doors off Middle Tennessee, 56-7. They covered as a 39.5-point favorite. Zeno, I start by asking you this. The line is 7 in favor of Alabama on Saturday evening. They're at home inside Bryant Denny in Tuscaloosa as the third-ranked team in the country. Last year, they were on the road in Austin, and they were laying 3 touchdowns. Zeno, why the disparity in the numbers just a season separated?
You mentioned the quarterback position. Obviously, that's the biggest issue right now. You had a reigning Heisman under center for Alabama, what was supposed to be one of the best offenses and the best teams in the country last year. And they just didn't play a very good game. I think that's really more than anything. But I think the bigger question, too, for Alabama is their defense, which was porous last year, particularly in the passing game. Go back to that Tennessee game. Go back to the LSU game. You saw Alabama's defense really not clamped down the way we're used to seeing them. So I think there are a ton of questions around the Crimson Tide right now and how good ultimately they're really going to be. We don't really know what we saw from week one from either of these teams. And I'll say this much. I mean, look, I would love to be able to lay it with Alabama here. I just, with a great measure of confidence and not really knowing what Jalen Milroe is, what the plan at quarterback is there any certainty that if Milroe throws 2 picks early that he's not going to get pulled from the game, even if it's a tie ball game early? Like, there's just a lot of questions around this Alabama team right now. My gut feeling says in this game more than anything that both these defenses are probably not as good as people think they are, and this may go over this total. I know we had a 20-19 game last year, but I think we're getting a depressed total because of it. I'm kind of surprised to see this number under 55. I thought it would be in the 57 range. I mean, we're at 54.5 right now. I mean, does 30-27 seem like it's realistically impossible for both these teams to be able to reach that? I think they both can get to the high 20s. Low 30s, and I think that's ultimately where this game lands. I don't love laying the touchdown here at Alabama just because of some of the uncertainty, but you know, my my gut kind of says that there's more points in this game than people would think.
By the way, taking a look at this game, you shouldn't need motivation for basically two top 10 teams in primetime getting after. But last year was supposed to be a welcome to the SEC moment for Alabama going on the road and playing Texas. Quinn Ewers got hurt earlier in that game. He was on fire. Most people saying, hey, look, if Ewers plays the entire way, they might pull the upset. From a Nick Saban, you know, philosophy, getting in these players' minds, any extra motivation to say we took them lightly last year, we won't do that this time?
Well, and you already saw the pettiness of this thing, DRS, with the tickets going out for Alabama and where they're going to put the Texas people at Bryant-Denny Stadium and everything. I mean, you know, I don't ever want to cross Nick Saban, right? Like, in spots like this, and this is why, Ben, you and I talked about all offseason. The idea that Alabama is a 6 or 7 to 1, you know, shot to win the national title is an auto fire bet for me because I'm never going to see that number again as long as Nick Saban is there. So, yeah, I think the idea that Alabama is being undervalued here is 100% true. I just would like a little bit more of a concrete data point here, particularly with the questions at quarterback. So I'm with you, DRS. I think in general, there's no extra motivation. But remember, both these coaches know each other very well, right?
Yeah.
Steve Sarkisian and Nick Saban worked with each other. Obviously, Sark was at Alabama. So there is a certain level of gamesmanship and sort of chess match going on here between these two coaches that I think ultimately may play a part in the outcome of this game.
Nick Saban, 28-2 all time against his former assistant coaches, only Jimbo Fisher in 2021, and of course Kirby Smart in the national championship game that year as well, able to take down their former boss. They asked Sark about that on the game broadcast during the halftime show for LSU and FSU on Sunday night. Steve Sarkisian fired back with what I thought was a brilliant response. I would love to know what the record is for other non-assistant coaches against Nick Saban during his time at the helm in Tuscaloosa, because, yeah, it's probably not very good either. Zeno, you saw those numbers right there for the overall outlook for both of these teams. You never want to anger Nick Saban. Well, the preseason AP poll voters already did that. Alabama outside of the top three in the preseason poll for the first time since 2009. That year, Alabama won a national championship. They did not receive a single first place vote in the preseason AP poll for the first time since 2015. Oh, yeah, that year, the Crimson Tide won a national championship. Alabama is ranked third. And Zeno, it's interesting. The question is always, is Texas back? They're the even money favorite to win the Big 12 Conference in their final year before joining the Crimson Tide in the SEC. My question for you, Mark Zeno, is Alabama back, which is always relative because it was only 1 year, but Alabama was on the outside of the college football playoff. Where do you think the outlook is for both of these teams with all the expectation entering Saturday night in Bryant-Denny?
I'm not going to openly bet against Nick Saban to win the SEC West this year. Just not going to do it. I mean, I wouldn't do it privately with you for that matter if that sentence came out wrong. But you get the point. I'm not going to fade Nick Saban in this spot because he always seems to turn things around. What we've known in years past in these situations is that he had a competent, qualified quarterback. We don't know that yet this year. Do I think Jalen Milroe could turn into that? Sure, I think he could. But is there an outlier where he doesn't? The problem here is that when Nick Saban has had the Jake Cokers and quarterbacks that haven't been, or Greg McElroy's, no disrespect to those guys, haven't been over the top great like Bryce Young and everybody else, they've had a top three defense in the country. And I don't know that they have that yet this year. So it's going to take a little while to figure out exactly what Alabama is. And let me just add one more thing in reference to Texas and Steve Sarkisian. Go back to that game last year, DRS. Forget the fact that Quinn Ewers got hurt. Steve Sarkisian coached scared, and he coached gutless, and he didn't go for the throat when he had several opportunities to do so in that game. That is more of the reason why Texas didn't pull that game out last year than necessarily Quinn Ewers getting hurt. So I would be careful, again, about backing Texas with Steve Sarkisian as a coach. In-game, at times, he's very, very questionable.
Mark, let me ask you a question about the Alabama program as it is. Most people, you know, youngsters, as I like to say, watching Alabama, figured they were always good way back in the day under Bear Bryant. But it wasn't too long ago we were rolling through the Mike Dubose, Dennis Franchione, Mike Shula's, and now you have, you know, obviously Nick Saban. Nick Saban's 71 years old. How much longer do you figure Alabama has Nick Saban here? And could this be one of those send-off seasons where he goes, you know what, didn't work out in my favor, maybe it's time to step away? What are the thoughts behind the evolution here of Nick Saban, and will he continue for a few more years to come in his 70s?
as long as he's still getting top three, top five recruiting classes, as long as they are still winning double-digit games every single year, guess what? There's no reason for him to walk away from this. I mean, the program is almost on autopilot to a certain extent. All Nick Saban needs to do is get ready for a game each week, and he's going to have the horses in the barn to be able to compete with everybody in the country. So I don't see him walking away at any point in time in the near future. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, same thing with Bill Belichick. For years, as long as they were making the playoffs, guess what? You know, the conversation was never needed to be had. So until that changes for Nick Saban, where they stop winning the SEC West, they stop going to SEC championship games and making the college football playoff, I think he'll be there as long as he wants to be. And when that is, nobody really knows.
17 years at the helm now for Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. Hey. During his time in non-conference games, and that includes late season bowl games, championship appearances, college football playoff spots, Nick Saban and the Tide, 73-7. Dating back to 2007, straight up in non-conference matchups. You know, another ranked versus ranked matchup featuring an SEC team this weekend in New Orleans. It's Tulane and Ole Miss. The Green Wave, a full touchdown dog, getting 7 points against the Runnin' Rebs. Ole Miss ranked 20th in the country. Tulane is 24th. Zeno, what is the key that will decide the outcome of this football game on Saturday?
Boy, this looks like it's going to be a really fun game with a lot of points scored, doesn't it? I mean, that's kind of what it indicates. Here's the thing, though. Look, I was on South Alabama against Tulane in week one. And you know what you found out? That the idea that they lost Tajay Spears and a couple of key players on defense didn't really show up because they were playing South Alabama. And that's no disrespect to South Alabama. It's a good program. But
good defense, though. Yeah.
Those things are going to show up this week. I would love to get a 6.5. I don't think it's going to happen, but the public seems to like Tulane a little bit more than I thought they would in this spot. But still, I mean, the idea that they're going to have the same measure of offensive success, and it wasn't that great measure of offensive success. They only scored 37 against South Alabama. So I would look at this and go, I think Tulane gets a little bit exposed here. And we find out that, guess what? You know, the Ole Miss offense and Lane Kiffin are still one of the top premier offenses in the country, and they've got weapons beyond weapons with Quinshon Judkins, Jackson Dart, and a whole bunch of other players on the field that are just going to, I really think, outclass Tulane. People are going to go back to last year's bowl game against USC. I get it, but you know what? That was last year. I'm not going to bring that game into this because it doesn't really equate. Again, no Tajay Spears, several players on the defensive side of the ball gone. I like Ole Miss in the spot.
By the way, taking a look at this game on its outset here, Michael Pratt last week, 14 of 15, 294, and 4 touchdowns. Is there a chance that they can hang around with that Ole Miss offense? What do you remember about Tulane? That power, almost triple option running game that's no longer there. Fun to see them a little bit more up-tempo and throwing the football.
Yeah, again, and I think, too, this will be a good test for Ole Miss early on to see if their defense has improved, which has been a huge challenge for Lane Kiffin over the last couple of years to really get a measure better, a step or two better to really start to be competitive with the Alabamas and the LSU in the SEC West. So I think they'll get a good challenge this week, but I think they're up to it.
Two of the best quarterback rankings in all of college football last week on the first full weekend of the year. Michael Pratt for Tulane, Jackson Dart, the starter for Ole Miss. Some other notable SEC matchups that we have this weekend. Georgia continues the easy portion of their schedule, if not the entire schedule being easy. A 43.5-point favorite against Ball State. Vandy, a 10.5-point dog against Wake. That's a good one as well. Auburn laying less than a touchdown against Cal. And then, of course, Donnie Wrightside's Miami Hurricanes. Only a 4.5-point underdog against Texas A&M in another really good one on Saturday, week number 2. The Mouth in the South, Mark Zeno, we appreciate the time. More of the Early Line up next here on Sportsman.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We round out hour number 2 of the Early Line, live right here on this Wednesday on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 150. 59. That's the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM, all across the Spiz Grizz Network. That is Sports Grid, and make sure you download the new Sports Grid app. It is the ultimate sports betting companion app. It is now available for download at both the Apple and the Play Store. We make it convenient for you. Scan the QR code on your screen. It is smarter to be on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens, but we love hearing from you to end out this second hour. DRS, let's do that right now on who's going to win the American League West divisional crown this year to end out the MLB regular season in Fade the Public. We got to get an at right side VP tag right here on Sports Grid TV. DRS, is that the handle, right? At right side VP?
That is, you know, just, yeah. And look, just type in DRS. It's going to get to me one way or the other, Ben. Let's keep it simple.
100%. Yeah. Right side on X or Twitter, you'll find some very fascinating things. But if you were to tag that handle, we get him involved here in the Fade the Public poll. Who wins the AL West, DRS, at Sports Grid TV on Twitter? The Astros, the Mariners, or the Rangers? Two games separating these two teams, DRS. More than 61% of the public going with Houston. They're the odds-on favorites at a minus 220 price.
Yep, just voted and bumped it up to 62% because the people have been listening over the past couple weeks for me getting involved with the Houston Astros. Smart people out there. No need to fade. Let's ride the wave here. It's the Astros.
DRS, we will continue to react with what the public has to say and what it sets for the rest of this Major League Baseball season. Looking at the American League West divisional odds. Looking at all that is at stake on this Wednesday, a showdown of Scherzer and Verlander, the former teammates in Arlington, on this Wednesday MLB slate as well. We do that as hour number three begins in just 55 seconds on the early line.